Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to podcasts. We haven't done this in a while, you and I.
Nope.
It's been a couple weeks. I will start with an article that I read.
Okay.
This is a very good article. I just read it this morning, actually. It's on Astral Codex 10, which is a rationalist guy who a lot of people in San Francisco like to read. And it's a very good article because I'm going to spoil it for the people out there. I still recommend you read it, but I'll ruin the effect. He tells a story in three different sections, and in each section, he starts it with saying, did you believe that? Because I did. And then I researched further. And that turned out not to be the case. So it starts, it's like, you know, the first story is that hospitals, which went around, made its round, hospitals are turning down people in Oklahoma because so many people are in there with ivermectin that gunshot victims can't be treated. And then the next section is, did you believe that? Because then I looked into it. And actually, the doctor that did that doesn't, like, one hospital came out and said that, no, that guy doesn't even really work here. And that's not true. Mm. And then I was like, yep, totally makes sense.
Sorry, what was the claim? That
the
people
claim
with
was
ivermectin
that
were...
A doctor from Oklahoma said that people in Oklahoma were being turned down, gunshot victims, because the beds were full with ivermectin overdoses and COVID and that kind of stuff. So people were bleeding and not able to get a hospital bed. Hmm. And I was like, did you believe that? That's not true. You know, this hospital came out and said, that guy doesn't even work here. That's not the case. Oh. Then he goes on to do another section. He goes, did you believe that? Because that's not true. Because this is a doctor who works at several different hospitals. And like, sure, maybe he wasn't at this particular one, but he's got, you know, five other, six other that if you just go to his LinkedIn that he's like active on or something like that. And then even after that, he goes, did you believe that? Because that's not true. And he's like, and just to be clear, I haven't called a single one of these hospitals, but this is all just from Google searching. Like what I found is apparently, and now I think the point of the article is don't even take this to be true.
Yeah.
This is a tentative story that this doctor went on a podcast, said that hospitals were filling up. In a later sentence, said that people were using ivermectin and case rates were going up. And mentioned that people were not able to get care because of the full hospital beds. At some point, that got morphed and was picked up by Rolling Stone, the BBC, The Guardian, into doctor says that hospital beds are filling up. And I think the point of the article is to point out not just the bias of the other side, but as you read it, you sense, and I sensed, where I was pleased with it. You know, I was like, ah, that makes sense. Like, the news is full of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, but that's not the whole story. Not only is the news, like, and still the news is totally full of shit. By the end of it, anyway, you slice and dice it. But I suppose more fundamentally, people are full of shit. That it doesn't even require a grand conspiracy. That it just one person to adjust a headline based on something they heard from a doctor who might have been using shorthand can then get picked up completely without research by the BBC, The Guardian, all of these things that we take to be serious and get reprinted. And I just reflecting myself, the question that I had for myself is why, for God's sake, do I still involve myself in reading anything? Which I think is the most interesting question.
Yeah, I don't know.
Why do you ever read anything?
No.
You got to read some things. Because you'll come to me and like, dude, did you hear?
Sometimes I'll check Reddit.
Yeah.
But
so that's the question. Why? Like if it is to be understood that my ability to trust that this corresponds to a real thing is approximately zero for 100 different reasons. And this isn't as fun as Game of Thrones, which I understand isn't real, but it's just way more cool. I'd rather know the history of the houses in Game of Thrones because that's exciting.
So why do you?
Why in God's name?
Well, what do you find it? Like, what's your source? Because I know you're not watching CNN.
Well, even this particular thing, Astral Codex 10, and I think he did a good job in this article of point, like, why do I read this thing? Because sometimes I walk away with political takes or, you know, takes, influence perspectives of reality based on claims that I'm not checking that he makes.
Well, I would guess you read Astral Codex 10 because you think that's the best way to get, quote unquote, the real story.
Yes.
Right? I think your idea is that the news is all fake, but him and the last psychiatrist have the ability to cut through the bullshit and tell you what's actually happening.
To a greater degree.
But I think that's honestly what people think about Fox News and MSNBC
exactly.
as well. They're like, oh, I watch this because I don't want the fake shit from the other side. I want to know what's really going on.
What is Tucker thinking? Yeah. So recognizing that's the same exact mental process that is occurring in everybody who I think is dumb and is also occurring in me. And I think he did a really good job of pointing the finger back at his own audience and being like, the hell are y'all doing here?
Yeah.
It's an interesting question. And I just wrote down, I was like, why do I do this? What do I emotionally get out of this that I am not just reading fiction?
I don't know, but I will say people do not like when you don't know what's happening in the quote unquote news.
Yes.
I was talking to somebody, I forget who, maybe I was talking to somebody and they're like, oh yeah, the fires. How are you with the fires? I was like, what fires? I'm like, California's on fire. Not my part of California. And they were like appalled is the best word I can use to describe it. That I didn't know that somewhere in the state of California, there was a big fire going on.
Yeah.
So I think there is a sense, at least in America.
Well, also, which is funny, I just want to point out that somebody who knows that you live in Los Angeles, who is asking you about fires, that can't tell the difference between Northern and Southern California, is upset with you for not knowing that there's a fire.
I know why I don't. I guess I could start with, I know why I don't try to watch the news, which was I just read Tim Ferriss's book where he says a lot of people spend a lot of time and mental energy consuming news and then discussing it with their friends and then doing nothing to change the world. And so if you're the kind of person that is going to use that information to, like, you're like, oh, I didn't know that this tragedy was happening in Rwanda, I'm going to fly to Rwanda and volunteer. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Like, if that's how you handle tragedies in the world, then it's very good for you to know what's going on. But if you are going to read them, bitch about them at dinner, and then do nothing about them, Tim's point, which I thought made a lot of sense, is you might as well just read anti-cancer, change your own diet, have more energy to pursue your own projects better.
And like, maybe even then donate more money to charity if you want it to be effective in the world.
Yeah, sure. But he basically just says most people don't use their knowledge of the quote-unquote news to do anything good for themselves or the world. They just get angry and then come together with their tribe to be angry together. And so he opted out and said, I'm just going to not do this. If I'm going to consume something, I want it to be Marcus Aurelius's meditations or something about how to get in better shape or something that's just going to make me better in the long run. Cause in his opinion, the news doesn't make you better in the long run. Yeah. And that was compelling. So that convinced me. So my reasoning is just his reasoning.
Well, I don't read the news. And to be clear, I'm not going to play the other side, but I know that the response of people is it does matter that you vote for the president in political activism because you can make a difference and your voice on social media matters. I happen to disagree with all that for subtle reasons, which I'm not going to address here because we've done it in the past and I don't want to deviate too much from this.
I don't know many people that gather news over the course of 4 years and then it sways which political party they vote for. You know,
yeah.
Like most
That's one of my criticisms is like, did you really need to invest this much time? Would you have not known which?
Well, sorry.
Which
so I should say I'll just to give Tim's argument all of its strengths. He also says the most important stuff will come to you through other people. Mm-hmm. So you'll know that the U.S. is leaving Afghanistan. You will not be oblivious to the most important things happening in the global news cycle, but you'll skip a bunch of stuff that is less important. And if you decide one is important, sure, I guess you can go out of your way to research it on your own. But he's talking about the daily consumption via a newspaper or a news channel that mostly is either repetition of something that you already heard about or being manipulated in a way to aggravate you, to misrepresent the information like Astral Codex, you're just saying. So it's not that there's virtue in knowing nothing except for what's happening in the 1 square mile around you, but that you're going to know most of the big stuff because it'll bubble up to you anyway through all the people who are addicted to consuming the news.
And I think also equally important is that while those short-term news stories perhaps have a higher likelihood of being very verifiably false, the degree to which you can trust the general opinion of your peers is also suspect. You know what I mean? Like, okay, did we leave Afghanistan? Did we leave on the correct timeline? Did we pull out? Like, literally the verb that you use confers a, did we retreat from Afghanistan? Mm-hmm. Confers a judgment on that is implicit. So almost anything that you're hearing from anyone about the world is rife in judgment and bias. But anyways, so I was thinking like, why do I do this? What do I get out of it?
You're missing the mic like crazy.
Am I missing the mic?
Justin,
can you hear me here?
Oh, really?
You got me, dude.
I see him over here.
What do I say? Yeah, so I was thinking, and you mentioned the social thing. I think there's a big social participation that one gets in the same way that you might watch ESPN to talk about a game. You get to participate socially, and you can gain advantage if you know two more things than the other person. Definitely interrupts boredom, which can otherwise you have to deal with the present moment, which is often not fun, just sinking in, being meditative, which we spoke, you know, most people, including myself, can't comfortably meditate for like more than 15 minutes or maybe 30 minutes, but certainly not 2 hours. So to have that time and just be like, I will sit still and not consume something or turn something over in my mind. And then I think, it makes me feel certain that I understand things, which I know better that I don't. You know, and I think all of those things probably people can relate to. And so I'm going to continue to try to focus on things that do not require, that are less subject to that bias, which is, I think, philosophy, comedy, fiction. You know what I mean? Like, and if I want to go to the news and treat it like, oh, this is about a fake world that nobody actually lives in, which is, might be totally false and might correspond to the truth, then that would be healthy. But I don't actually think I can address it that way. So yeah, I do think that there's, and many of the fiction books that I've read have had lasting impact on me that I think has been really positive, even though they don't say anything about planet Earth or the people who live
in it. I feel like we, as a society, put a lot of emphasis on understanding the short term of quote unquote what's happening in the world, and then almost no emphasis on understanding longer term history. And so Ray Dalio's whole argument is he is able to be a better investor and know more about where the world is heading because he just understands what's happened in the last 700 years.
Yeah, 700.
And no one else is looking at that. And so I almost wonder if you'd be better off, because history does repeat itself, if you're like, okay, I really want to know what's happening in the world, I'm going to study what has happened through the course of time instead of just being really, really, really well informed on what MSNBC has decided to tell me about what happened yesterday.
Yeah, that's his argument, is that history repeats itself, but not in the span of a human lifetime. So the people will see like seasons only once and then die. So if you're not a student of history, which again is subject to a lot of the same difficulties in getting to the truth, then, well, it could be a problem. Anyway, I don't know if you have anything else you wanted to say on this particular thing. I just have a bunch of pretty random things that came up for me this week.
Go for it.
So this is, again, what was I doing prior? This happened most recently, but prior I was reading Reddit. And this is, I suppose, an example of one of the things that I try to not need to know anything too specific in order to learn from and have an opinion on. So I mentioned this to you last night, but there was a post on Reddit that was a tweet from CNN and then a response. And the response was what Reddit really seized on that they liked, because it was like shut down. And it was CNN saying, like, things you can do to prevent global warming. It was, you know, reduce your meat consumption by 30%, whatever. Add two other things that don't matter. Turn off your light bulbs or whatever. And then the response was, you know, reminder that 20 corporations contribute to 71% of the greenhouse gas emissions, and blaming it on people is irresponsible and shirks the real problem. And I think that without needing to verify the specificity of the 20 companies or 71%, it does seem like there's a misunderstanding of supply and demand that is occurring there, which is like those companies are not just churning greenhouse gases into the atmosphere for shits and giggles. They're doing it to sell that person and me and you and our audience all the products that we demand. So like some of those companies are very likely ExxonMobil and the meat company that they're suggesting we reduce our intake by. Like if people stopped eating meat at a rate of 30% and found solutions that were created less carbon emissions, they would not keep having as many cows, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that would
immediately reduce their carbon footprint. And one of the things that I see in the world, and it's, I think, highlighted on Reddit, is, it occurs everywhere, is finger pointing at those more powerful and saying that they're the ones that need to change, which has an element of truth in it, but which also completely neglects one's own personal responsibility and contribution to the problem. And I see that frequently on that. And then the self-righteousness in the comments. And then my self-righteousness looking at the comments. And I was like, man, this is just a big, horrible spiral of...
Well, humans love to feel superior to other humans. Yeah. So we will find it any way we can get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah. And it's that all the way down. It's just people saying that the world is bad and somebody else did it. And it's not my fault. And I'm one of the good guys. And they're one of the bad guys. It's just, it seems so, so common. And what else?
You get to point your finger at Exxon if you've bought an electric car.
Yeah.
That's when you get to say it's Exxon's fault because I've opted out of the gasoline game.
Or riding a bike or going off grid. Yeah. And there's a lot of things that one can do that require sacrifice. You'd be like, I no longer am putting a demand on Exxon or the meat manufacturers or any of these other people. My carbon footprint has been reduced. If more people behaved like me and I've set my life up in such a way that that's plausible, possible, the world would be a better place. Maybe then you get to indulge in that self-righteousness. Yeah.
It is interesting to think about how ultimately we all talk about corporations like they are sentient entities, but they are so reactionary mm-hmm. to the consumer. Like if every person on the planet just stopped using gasoline, they would figure out how to make windmills or solar panels or whatever it is. But they are also very, very happy to destroy the planet while they eke out the profit of selling fossil fuels to the extent that people will purchase them.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like amoral, not immoral, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. They're just profit-seeking and completely neutral to the horrible secondary effects that may or may not occur as they profit-seek.
I think perhaps there's a greater degree of sociopathy or psychopathy in the most powerful because the people who pursue those positions are more likely to want power at all costs. But we said it before that a corporation is basically, oftentimes, your own personal selfishness multiplied by a tremendous amount of power. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, are you sending extra tax revenue to the government? Are you, you know, how conscious are you? What sacrifices are you making in order to make the world a better place? And if people were, I think if many people, there's some that, you know, Greta swam across the freaking Atlantic, you know what I mean?
Oh, like, no, I'm just thinking if global warming is like super, if you're in that, if global warming is super important to you and you think it's a huge problem, probably what you would imagine that person would do is know the names of the 20 companies that contribute to 71% of greenhouse gases and never purchase from them.
Or the industry.
And go out of their way to be like, okay, I'm positive. These are the 20 companies that contribute 71% of the carbon dioxide that's going up in the world. So I'm going to never purchase from them.
Yeah, to look at one's own carbon footprint, compare it to the average of the world and see where it stands. And as an American, you're going to find that you're ruining things. that almost everybody in the United States of America, with rare example, and you know who you are, you composters, you kayakers, and you know all you people living off grid.
You bike to work, like, open the windows and don't use AC. Yeah.
You use tungsten light bulbs that last forever. Fine. Okay. but if that's
the
not
real
you,
heroes.
But if you're a social media person, warrior, it's very likely not you. So cool your jets. So, and this, you know, another Reddit thing. This one is a spicier take, but I thought it and I was not going to say it, but I will. One thing that I've noticed, and this is anecdotal, but I would suggest that it would be an interesting study to run, is that on Reddit, popular front page, which you can log, you know, if you log in incognito, I'm pretty sure you'll see an unpersonalized version of the front page. Not every day, but oftentimes there's a story about a crime or a shooting or a victim or a punch in the face or whatever. And I would like someone to run this. I want to see when they include the races of the assailant and the victim. Mm-hmm. And my hypothesis is that they are not equal, that it is not evenly distributed across the races, that if it is a white assailant on a minority victim in America, minority in America, not minority in the world, that it is very likely to mention that it is a white assailant, that if it is a minority assailant against a white person, it is very unlikely that they mention that. And I've seen this many times, and it just came up yesterday. And at this point, it's reflexive. It said, you know, man shoots person in bar. And I said, this is not because I think anything bad about any group of people, but I think this about Reddit. I said, I know what the race of the man is that was not listed. Because if
it was...
Because if it doesn't say white, I know what race he is.
They don't leave it out if it's white.
They will leave it out, yes. But if it's a white guy, they will include it. And the same thing with the victim, you know, man. And I could guess these, I think, with a higher degree of probability than would be suggested by the racial demographics of the United States of America or the world. You know, man assaults Asian elderly person. I can guess the race of the man in that. And it's not white, because it would say white man. This is not a fact. This is my...
This is your hypothesis?
Hypothesis, but I would propose a study that if anybody cared to disagree with me that they could prove me wrong, would be to go incognito to the Reddit front page, and you could probably way back machine 6 months, a year, whatever, and first list every single story that involves an assailant and a victim, and then take the, go in, find the races of both, and then find to what degree each is represented. I could be wrong, but if I am right, which I believe I am, it's just so, it's, I actually think what is happening in the world and in America is that people punch and kick and shoot each other for non-racial reasons almost every fucking time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the vast, vast, vast majority, which I think most people would agree with, but I suppose it's even more vast than that community would lead you to believe, that most of the time when someone walks into a bar and shoots somebody, or anywhere and shoots somebody, it is because of a different reason. And what winds up happening, if you're not aware of this, is that man shoots person, and you're not, you know, you go, okay, I got it. But what you wind up seeing is that there is so much more white on minority crime in the Reddit universe than you see represented in other directions. And I think it gives at least that particular community a skewed sense of the world. And also they're reinforcing, because these are user generated titles, you know, that is a view of the world that I think is important for a lot of the people in that community to have. So anyway, I know it's probably a spicy take, but I saw it, I was going to say it, and then I was not going to say it. So I said, I have to say it.
Is that a spicy take? I mean, to say that headlines are created to create an emotion in the people that see them? I feel like that's not that spicy. When people are making headlines, they think, how do I say this in a way that's going to get the most clicks, shares,
you know, upvotes? What's interesting? You raise a really good point, because I was saying the Reddit homepage. But what's possible, it is totally possible that net submissions to Reddit are demographically representative. And it's possible that the ones that get the most upvotes are the ones that are how I describe them, that are selective.
That would be my bet.
So that on average, the submissions, you know, the same story might come in with two different phrasings. And the question is, which of these is going to perform better?
I'm positive that the same news story can get submitted to Reddit with different titles. And
we've seen
confident
it.
That yeah. The one that will get upvoted is the one that creates the strongest emotional reaction in people.
Yeah, interesting. So that would be less an indictment or criticism of the Reddit title posters, which in that case, again, don't know if this is true, is just a random assortment, and more of the the limbic brain of the Reddit community, which on average is just going to tilt in that direction, because that's become...
Well, it's not just the Reddit. This is also true of Facebook. This is all true of Instagram. This is also true of CNN. This is people share stories that make them angry at a much higher rate than stories that don't.
Interesting.
Well, and the title can make a news story way more inflammatory depending on how you frame it.
Well, you pointed out, you just made me think of something that I hadn't considered, which is I was treating the Reddit community a bit like a monolith. And what you're saying is like, no, if it just affects 3% of the Reddit community in a dramatic way, that can tilt the upvotes, which tilts which gets seen on the front page. And that's, you know, what people have been talking about for a long time, which is how small groups of extremists can have an outsized effect on social media presence, which is, you know, if you're just animated enough, you only need 20,000 upvotes in order to make the Reddit front page. And then most people, you know, only 1 out of 100 on Reddit who will ever log in and leave a comment like me are just reading that and then having an opinion on the Reddit readers, which is not necessarily representative of those people, but just instead of a small minority. That's probably closer to the truth.
I also think it's just universal too. It's not just Reddit. It's
sure
humans.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
It's the news, it's Facebook, it's Instagram. I don't know if it's TikTok because I don't have a TikTok, but if TikTok gets political, it'll be TikTok.
I'd be willing to bet that Fox News tilts. You might be able to run the same analysis on their headlines and find that it's totally reversed.
Sure.
Like that the exact racial demographics for assailant victim could be completely switched on that, and definitely are on some right wing, whatever. I don't know. What was the one? Parlor or something like that? That it's probably the exact opposite. Oh, yeah, Parler's
going to give you the exact opposite. You're going to know if the assailant is black, but if it's a white assailant, you won't know. Yeah, it'll just be the reverse. Yeah, people just want their worldview reinforced.
It's crazy. Yeah, as I think of that, we're all victim. I've just been thinking this week and many other weeks, I suppose, about how sticky the things you believe are and how like the greatest favor I could do myself is to just avoid Velcroing to anything, you know, just of like, try not to touch any ideologies or beliefs, because once you hear them, you're likely to want to like hold them very dearly and close. So I guess I have to go on a silent retreat or something. I don't know. Let me see.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Even when, because most of the time I'll try to be data driven. I'll look at the CDC data or I'll look at the police data or whatever it is. But then once you have your opinion, it becomes your opinion. You start to feel an attachment to it. And it's, you now need to see pretty indisputable data to change your mind. Whereas you might have come in open-minded. You're like, I'm cool with this. Flipping either way. COVID could be the black plague or it could be the flu. Then you look at the data, you make your decision. But then once you make your decision, you've planted your flag and you're immediately, I think, anchored to it. And you're less open-minded as you continue to check the data. And then all of a sudden you do have that bias where you ignore stuff that goes against you and you cling to things that show what you want to believe.
Yeah.
I've just seen that in myself, even as someone who tries to be data driven, is there is a bias once you plant your flag and you say, oh, okay, based on the data, I have this belief. Now that's your belief. And it's an effort to continue to be open-minded after you decide what you think.
Yeah. And I think to what we'd mentioned earlier, probably there's a lot of social reward at, you know, you read something, an article, you talk to a like-minded friend, you say it, and they go, yes, oh, I didn't know that. And it's like, yes, now I love this belief. Or somebody that you don't have a high opinion of is negative towards you. You go, well, now I definitely need to keep this thing. Slightly related, I've been watching trash television, which I think is, at this point, just is probably more valuable than the news. I was watching Too Hot to Handle. And at the end of, so the premise of the show is that they put a bunch of people who think they're going to hook up with one another onto a show. They tell them in the first episode that there's a prize of $100,000. And if you don't hook up, you get it all. And for every hookup there is, we reduce that money. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a tragedy of the commons thing.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
It's like, it's a pure tragedy. There's actually a lot of issues with the show, because I won't even go into them because, of course, there's issues with Too Hot to Handle. But they, at the end of it, they tell them, actually, the winner of the show gets all the money. We split it last season. We're not going to split it this season.
Oh, sick.
And it is fucking amazing. And I believe that the deception was self-deception and not deception of the camera. How quickly people who had literally had sex on the show, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like 2 a.m. in a room with 12 people snuck over to sleep with one another are so interested in relationships. And they like really feel changed. Mm. And like, this has been such a good experience. These are the people that cost the most money to the group.
You know what I mean?
And I believe, I actually, because they're not that good of actors, I believe that when they realize that if they change, they could make $55,000, that they then genuinely wanted something different for the next 48 hours.
Sure.
Like they actually, their brain did them the favor of being like, no, we want relationships now. Like we don't want to sleep around anymore. Back when we had to split that with 12 other people, tragedy of the commons. Like, sorry, guy, I'm going to get mine.
Yep.
And it was crazy to, as soon as that announcement came out, all of the little confessionals just had such a different tone.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, I don't even know about the show. Like, I feel like I might get it. It's like, I feel like I've learned so much. It's been so great. And like, our relationship is stronger than ever. And then the guy who won, you go to his Instagram with the girl that he won, and they didn't have a single photo together. Like, they broke up right away.
Sure.
You know, people's brains kick in and do them favors in order to earn them money and make them believe things.
I even felt it with the vaccine. So I've been pretty clear on the podcast. My whole thing was for someone that's young, and healthy and had already had COVID and had an antibody test that came back, but I still had antibodies. I was not concerned about getting COVID. Mm-hmm. And also, I thought the vaccine had very little downside, wasn't going to kill you, but, you know, we only have so much data on it. We have no idea what happens in 30 years. So I was like, probably COVID, I'm fine. Probably vaccine, I'm fine. But I'm just tilting to I'm going to wait because I already had COVID and I literally went and got an antibody test that said I still had the antibodies. Yep. And then I got the vaccine anyway because I'm going to a wedding in New York.
And they won't let you in.
And they won't let you in. Yeah.
Which is funny because they don't care about immunity. We talked about this. They don't care about immunity, which you could demonstrate that you had.
Oh, yeah. I said I have an antibody test that shows I have antibodies and I'll get a negative COVID test that shows. Mm-hmm. So I don't have COVID and I have the antibodies, which studies are coming out. You're 13 times more protected from the Delta variant if you have natural immunity than if you have the vaccine. Mm-hmm. So I was like, surely that'll be pretty solid for you guys since that's your fear is the breakthrough cases. And they're like, no. No, you need the vaccine card.
Yeah, that's, so I mean, like, it's political on both sides. But that to me was just fucking ridiculous when I was like, you don't care about illness. You care about compliance.
Well, only because I wasn't saying, hey, I got COVID, so you should trust me.
Yeah.
I went and got blood work done in a hospital that came back that I had antibodies at a material amount.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I did the work to like check on if the quote unquote natural immunity was there. But I noticed in myself, like, well, I was like, okay, I'm not going to get the vaccine because who knows what it's going to be like in 50 years. And then once I got it, I was like, this thing's probably safe. Like I could sense even in myself that thought that, oh yeah, maybe this is cigarettes and we'll all find out that doctors are prescribing it and it ends up causing cancer. Once I got it, I was like, that's way less likely than I thought it was.
Yeah.
And so I could just see my own confirmation bias that now that I'd done it, I had to convince myself this was totally safe, not just 99.5%
safe. And you felt it, I'm sure. It wasn't just like, top brain. You're like, I feel safe with
this. No, sorry. I felt it first.
Yeah.
And then I went, what the fuck is happening? All of a sudden, I've lost my ability to understand why other people won't get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Like, I hear other people won't get vaccinated. I'm like, just do it. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a second. 2 days ago, I would have said that makes total sense. We have no idea what happens 50 years from now.
But you can't hold on to that because that's upsetting. That's upsetting to think I might have injected myself with something that appeared safe today and might have some negative consequences in 25 years or 50 years.
Yeah, we just might find out. And it might not be massive. We might find out that there's a 15% increase in prostate cancer if you got this thing, you know? But yeah, I couldn't hold on to that sense. Mm-hmm. And it was only upon, with talking to people, I was like, I feel like I felt differently 2 days ago. And then I got the vaccine. And now I sure do feel confident the vaccine is safe.
And everyone should get it.
I recognize my own confirmation bias. It's like, yeah, why don't we all just do it?
Because if I have a 15% increase of prostate cancer, but everyone does, nothing is increased. we all have prostate cancer.
Yeah, it was more just that I just immediately threw out the fact that that might happen in my brain.
Yeah.
I was like, no, this is safe. Yeah. There's definitely no way this thing that we have a year worth of
data on. Have you felt more concerned at all with the repercussions of getting COVID since that? Okay, so you've been less afraid of the vaccine. On the other side, prior to that was, you know, you might get COVID again at some point when your antibodies were off. Have you felt that at all or no?
Dude, I'm so freaking
because that's
immune.
Not been a, yeah, exactly, because you haven't
I still have
to.
My natural antibodies and I have the vaccine. Yeah. Like,
got it.
And I'm 34 and I don't have any pre-existing things. I feel like surely there can't be a more COVID immune person on the planet than me right now.
Got it.
So no, I that has not gone up at all. I'm not worried about getting a breakthrough case.
Got it.
Yeah, that some study in Israel came out and it hasn't been peer reviewed yet. So I would say take it with a grain of salt, but they're saying.
See, you read news. You said you weren't reading any news. You got the news.
Yeah.
That's the second study you've referenced.
Well, I don't put a lot of weight into it because it's not been peer reviewed.
Well, who knows if it's real is all I'm saying. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I mean like, it all could be nonsense. I'm a hyper skeptic at this point, and I know that people are going to find that frustrating. And I one day would have a longer conversation on the podcast with someone who disagrees, but I think with you understand me, so I won't.
I do think COVID is real.
Yeah,
not a skeptic that COVID is. Aren't there people that thought at one point COVID was like?
No, I had it. I definitely had it last December. No doubts there. So. Just a random thing. This is the last thing on red team, blue team. Interesting, living in California, there's a recall election going on. I have seen several ads about it. Every single one has been for Gavin Newsom. And they have, none of them have said anything about Gavin Newsom's positives. They've all stressed fear of a Republican governor, which I just thought was an interesting understanding of human psychology. It's like, oh, you, these people get it. they are not going to convince anyone to show up and vote for Gavin Newsom. And I think,
well, that was how they ran Biden too.
It's how they ran Hillary. It was how they've run everyone. And so they're 1-1 on presidents. And
that's not how Obama ran. Obama wasn't a don't.
No, he was hoping to change, man.
He was. He had principled vote for him mindset.
Yes, and I actually think the Democratic Party seems to increasingly be leaning on this, and it might be effective. Like, it didn't work in 2016, but I'd say it was very effective. And I think part of it was Donald Trump and the reaction of big tech and much of the media against him, which made the anti sentiment effective. And I wonder if it's going to be the entire Democrat strategy for major elections going forward.
I think it can only work for so long though, because what do you do? I think, so the problem is, I'm not super politically informed, but I imagine that the thing that wins elections is actually voter turnout. And when you have, if you have a moderate Republican like Mitt Romney, and then a candidate
maybe
that doesn't stand for anything except for don't let the Republicans win, it's not that people will switch parties, but it, you just might not get that turnout because they're like, oh, it actually wouldn't be the end of the world. Like, if Trump wins, it's the end of the world. But if Mitt Romney wins, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. So I've only seen a handful of the ads, but the ads, and some of them do paint, because I don't know anything about the Republican candidates really at all. I don't know anything about Gavin Newsom. But they do paint them as extreme, which they may or may not be. And I wonder if that's just going to become the new strategy, which is like, look, fuck if Mitt Romney's extreme. We'll just make him extreme. And then we'll say,
I hope at some point you get a candidate that runs on their own platform and positions instead of just, I'm not the other guy.
It just might be less effective, you know? It might be less effective. So we'll see. I don't know. And that's just, you know, two data points and totally anecdotal. Another thing, which this was interesting, total different, which, because we get off the politics now. There was a clip that went out of a guy who snuck into the Jake Paul fight and found Logan Paul and asked him for a job. Did you see it?
Mm-mm.
It was interesting. So it starts with him crying in the car because Logan didn't give him a job.
Nice.
And then he cuts to, have you seen it, Justin? Name?
I saw a thumbnail from a different YouTuber talking about it.
Okay. What's the guy's name?
I don't know the guy's name. He's just a 22-year-old. I don't know his name. He's just a guy. And he put it up and Logan did. And Logan was came across rather well, was direct and said no and sort of explained why.
Was it that if I say yes to you, people are going to constantly break into events and harass me?
Well, first off, he said, well, how'd you get in here? You snuck in. You did a sneak in video. No, I didn't. Okay, I did. You know, it's okay. So kind of lied right off the bat. He snuck in. But Logan gave him, I think, more time than he needed to, quite frankly. And the kid said, you know, I quit my job. I quit my job. Okay, so what can you do? I can work hard. I don't need money. Like, what are you good at? I don't know, but like, that's why I'm here. I want to learn. He's like, so like, there's no handouts, he says. Like, I did this. I came out here with my brother, Jake. I didn't know anybody. We did ourselves. He's like, I'm not looking for a handout. I'm just looking for a job. And it's like, I'll work for free. And without, you know, it's funny. But I do think that there is a prevalent mentality, it's not universal, that exists in relationships and jobs, which I want to put an end to because you're listening, because I know that good-hearted people have reached out to me with a similar pitch, which is my desperation, desire, and quote-unquote willingness to work should be sufficient to get you to mentor me or go on a date with me or something. Mm-hmm. And that is totally backwards. Totally backwards. Like, this kid quit his job prior to showing up, which I would say, like, as someone who quit his job, is totally stupid. Like, like, Logan wasn't going to take you if you didn't quit your, like, what does that demonstrate to Logan? That I want it really bad? He doesn't care how bad you want it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think it's got problems in later in life because it can keep you very focused on other people and not your internal needs. But having read How to Win Friends and Influence People was really important to you and I in our young 20s because it emphasizes that people do not care about what you want. Mm-hmm. The most common persuasion tactic people take is to tell other people what they want. And it's and you go, oh, I know that. Read the book. It'll blow you away how often you and the people around you try to get what they want by saying what they want to other people.
Yeah, no, I mean, the biggest... just a succinct way to put it, is the biggest like leadership and persuasion mind shift that I had when I was younger was to never say I and to only speak in you,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like you're how basically when you're saying I, it's only in the way that I can help you.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I think is there's this concept, and I don't know where it came from, that an unskilled person who requires a lot of training
mm-hmm.
is valuable because they're willing to work for quote unquote free.
And
I think what people don't realize is like, if you're someone like Logan Paul or even us who are much smaller, your time is your most valuable resource. And so for you to go unpaid, but require training time and management time and effort and energy is not, that is a take, you know, to, oh, you don't have to pay me money. You just have to pay me by training me 2 hours a day, every day,
or even thinking of a job for me to do.
It's like, that's expensive.
Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That 10 hours to train you a week, or even 5 hours, or even 1 hour. Like these are, this is expensive.
The amount of money I would pay to not have to train someone, I mean, is I think to a lot of people looking for jobs, you'd be shocked. And yeah. Logan, I'm sure, is even higher. Like,
no, coming in with a pre-existing skill, Alex Ramosi, the guy we talked to, I think that was last week, yeah. right? That's the number one thing he looks for when he's hiring. He's like, what pre-existing skill do you have? I think there's, and I'm sure, I'm 100% sure I was guilty of this as well when I was younger, thinking that just because I was quote unquote smart because I'd done well in school and I had gumption and I was willing to work hard and I was willing to be trained made me a valuable asset is just a misconception I think a lot of people have, and that I'm sure that I had.
And I want to, and again, not to pile on, because I think that there's a, there must be a cultural meme, because this happens a lot. And I think Tim Ferriss is kind of like, reach out to the people you admire, which there's a lack of nuance there.
Shoot your shot. First of all, I'm not saying don't shoot your shot, but just expect to not hear back or to get a no.
Well, what is lacking, I think, from that, as the internet has developed, is a sense like this kid, not to blame him, was only thinking of his own perspective. Like, didn't think, okay, so I show up to Logan's event. How is Logan going to feel? How many times has this happened to Logan?
What does he want to focus on right now?
Yeah.
The fights and his brother or me?
Yeah, and if I was...
That's the worst time to show up.
If I was to do this, like, perhaps, like, slipping him a note and being like, hey, man, you know what I mean? Like, could be a better way of doing it. And if you really sat down and thought through how different his life is and the problems that he's facing and how you might ameliorate those or help with those and have a plan and how common this offer is, you'd approach it very differently. But what it shows is that that kid, totally understandably, was unable to step outside of himself and think, man, if somebody tracked me down at my brother's game and offered to work for me for free, I'd be thrilled. You have not stepped into his world at all.
I do know people I know multiple people, just to be clear, who have done this, who have sniper shot a mentor.
Oh, yeah.
And it is often, one showed up to an event that they paid to go to. So the guy was giving a speech and he paid to go. And then at the end walked up and gave the guy a book that was based on something he had said on a podcast that showed a lot of, emotional intelligence. And then also didn't ask for anything in return and just kept in touch with him over a period of weeks before eventually asking him if he would work together on something. And then the other one was someone that put together a giant pitch for a project and sent it to someone. And the pitch was for an idea that the recipient thought was terrible, but it was just laid out very well in a way that was impressive to them. Mm-hmm. And they saw that this person could be a valuable asset day one. So instead of saying, hey, I want you to train me, what I have is free time and gumption, he said, hey, I want to do this project for you. And I've already laid it out in this easy to read slide deck that shows you how I'm going to make you money.
Yeah.
And the guy said, I have no interest in this idea, but I like that unasked you've put together this thing that shows me I could hire you and day one you could be doing good work for me.
Yep.
And so then he took him on. So I do know multiple people who have hit up multimillionaire people who do get hit up a lot and they do get the response, but it's never by talking about how much they love them and how hard they're willing to work.
And what it is, it's showing how hard you're willing to work. Because what those people did is put in hours of work with relatively zero guarantee, in fact, a low percentage chance that it would even get looked at. You know, I put together this whole slide deck, understanding that it might not ever make it to your eyes. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try to, but what a lot of people do is like, I'm willing to hard work, but you have to give me the go-ahead first and tell me that no. Like, if that kid had shown up with like, I made you this new account on this thing. I've uploaded your videos. I split them out. Like, here's the thing. That could have gone very differently.
You've been copyright striking me and I've been giving you the ad revenue, but I just want you to show you this Logan Shorts channel that I made that has 10 million subscribers. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I built this and I haven't been paid for it, but I've been doing work for 3 months. Yes. And I would like to do it for you now. Otherwise, I'm going to stop doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, something like that. Our longest tenured employee, I believe what happened is we were looking for a job for someone who could Photoshop stuff. And we were asked for applications. And what she did was she did the job, right? She did 1 day's worth of the job and said, here's what.
She did 30 minutes worth. It was, and which was above and beyond every other applicant. I said, we were looking at the time. I didn't know what social media platform, but I was like, hey, can you make our videos into Instagram posts with the quotes? And people are like, yes, I can. Here's my portfolio. Yes, I can. Here's my portfolio. And she said, yes, I can. I've made, here's three examples from your videos. And she grabbed three quotes that I'd said and put them in. I was like,
got the job.
Done. Over. Yep. You know what I mean? Completely over. It wasn't even close. So yeah, she's been with us the longest. So then I have a couple other things. I don't really have anything to say about this. I just saw, because I've been trying to get into D&D, that there was a D&D person named Arcadum who had allegations made against him that I think might have ended his career, or at least put a pause to it. Mm-hmm. He allegedly was toxic and harassed and slept with or badgered to sleep with other people that were playing D&D with him. He was the dungeon master and had, I think, a position of power relatively within the group because it was his channel and he determined who would get to play. And a number of the women recorded Discord calls with him. And I listened to a couple before. I was like, this is kind of fucked up, listening to a call that one person knows is being recorded and the other doesn't. I was like, I understand that this might be the only way to be believed, but it also needs to be taken with a huge grain of salt. So I'm just going to try to throw this out. That said, he did sound like, in those moments, total ass. but, you know, who knows when one person knows that there's a recording and the other person doesn't. But it is, again, strange. As I sat there, I was like, we have just totally accepted. Like, what state did this occur in? Do we know the consent laws with privacy and single way record? Like, where was this? Is anybody concerned that any phone call that they might be having might be discussed with everyone else? Not saying that this guy is a good person, by the way.
Well, I mean, but if you think that their crime is heinous, then of course you don't care. Mm-hmm. If I illegally recorded a serial killer.
Well, some of the crimes were, I think they would state as like being controlling, verbally abusive, you know, asshole, but certainly nothing jail, you know, in many of the allegations.
But here's what I'm saying. Think of the extreme. I illegally record a serial killer and I get them caught. Everyone applauds it, right?
Yeah.
There's a level of deplorable behavior that we think is admirable.
Skip the rules.
To illegally record.
Yeah.
That you should do it. I could bust a child sex slave ring by doing something illegal. That's encouraged, right? Mm-hmm. By most people, you know, maybe not by police, but by most people, they say, yeah, do it. Do the illegally record it if it gets that behavior stopped. So then the question is, how deplorable do you think this behavior is? And I think for people who think that it's awful to do what he was doing, then of course it makes sense. Like, great, you illegally recorded someone doing something awful. So the question just becomes, how awful
does this person perceive it? Yeah.
Yeah. Not even how awful is the behavior, because I have no idea who this guy is, but how awful is the person consuming the story? How often do they think the behavior is? And if they think it's awful, then of course they don't give a crap that it's been illegally recorded, because
I don't think it's just that. I think that when we, you know, listening to the Donald Sterling thing where you hear him saying you can date black guys, but you can't bring him to the game to the girl that he is pretending to be in a relationship with, I guess technically in a relationship with, but she's 40 years younger than him. I don't think there was a consideration as for how bad is what he's saying. I think it's a complete lack of empathy for somebody recording you and playing that conversation on the news. I think most people consuming these stories, be getting outraged, could not possibly conceive of someone in a relationship with them recording them and having that make national or international news.
I also don't remember what Donald Sterling said, but I imagine that the people who were, I imagine that they were extremely upset by the racism in the statement. Mm-hmm. So they don't, again, they don't care if it was grabbed illegally, because in their minds, saying this at all is awful. And so who cares if we got this information illegally?
Well, okay, take the Rachel Nichols, where she was basically saying, I believe in diversity, but not my job. So mm-hmm. stop handing my job away. I mean, I don't think people thought, again, I don't know that there's a real, to me, I understand what you're saying, that if, that if,
well, I think she got, I think people did push back for her and say this was recorded illegally and shouldn't be used to fire her.
I guess I think they pushed back and said that, not that, they said what she did wasn't so bad, so don't fire her. But they didn't say, hey, the way that you obtained this ought to be thrown out, which is what a court of law might have done. And I don't know the state laws in Florida where she was or in the place where the server farm was, particularly. But there, I guess what I'm noting is nobody gives a shit about other people's privacy anymore. Like at
no one cares.
All.
I don't think many people care about their own privacy. Everyone who gets
this
TikTok.
This is the thing with Edward Snowden, man. That guy laid his life on the line being like, once I expose this to the American people, surely they will rise up and realize that the NSA is recording all of their calls and they will not tolerate it. And no one budged. No one cared.
Though, because, and I think it's not bad math, honestly. I think most people think to themselves, I don't need to be concerned about privacy because what I'm doing isn't so bad. I'm not committing murders or something like that. And so because of my relative level of fame, non-fame, the only thing that I could possibly get in trouble for would be a heinous crime. Mm-hmm. So I don't care. Look at my texts. Oh, I make jokes you don't like? No one is ever going to care that Bob in the middle of Pennsylvania sends a joke that maybe is inappropriate because there's no money in canceling me. There's no, those headlines will never get clicked. No one cares. So the only thing that matters and for privacy is if you're Jeffrey Dahmer and you're doing something awful, or if you're famous, at which point making an inappropriate joke is salacious enough to become news. Mm-hmm. And so most people do the math and go, all right, well, I'm not Jeffrey Dahmer and I'm not famous, so I don't care. So I don't think they care about other people's privacy or their own privacy.
Yeah. And it's, I guess the same thing that's been happening for years with paparazzi, which is like, of course, I wouldn't like that if that happened to me, but I can't conceive of this person as a real human being saw by the tabloid because it interests me. You know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, I'm going to I'm baffled by that because I think paparazzi, the fact that what they do, I understand how the law protects them, but it is wild what they can get away with. But no, the people who buy the tabloids would hate if they were treated like the people in the tabloid. Mm-hmm. But they just know that'll never happen because they're not on the path to being famous. So they don't mind funding the thing that they would absolutely hate happening to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, so I actually think people don't care about privacy for themselves.
Yeah. So, well, I guess what I should do.
With Alexa, Siri, TikTok, all this stuff, like we're all being recorded all the time and no one minds.
I will try not, and I did click off of this, to listen to privately recorded conversations, you know, regardless of state law, just because like, I'll try to be the change I want to see in the world because, you know, the person whose video I watched got a 0.001 AdSense and that contributed to the algorithm and it contributed to the spreading of it. So, yeah, I think for me, if this is a private conversation that was recorded and it's not about breaking up a child pedophile ring, just don't click it. Don't listen to it. Don't have an opinion on it. You oughtn't have been there and it's none of your business. And perhaps this is the golden rule. You wouldn't like it positions reversed. You wouldn't like a single recording conversation of you being an asshole, which, by the way, I have been in my life.
What about the, like, what about the opposite argument, though, which is if I don't listen to this, I'll keep watching this guy's channel, and I don't want to fund someone who does this stuff. So I don't want. So if he is not doing anything illegal, but is using his position in a way that I find inappropriate to pressure people into sex, I don't want him to have a position of power. But if he wasn't doing that and he was just running this show, then I don't mind funding him. So I need to know if he's doing that behavior because I don't want to give him my AdSense if he's going to use his power to do what I think is legal but bad behavior and pressure people. And so there's an argument to be made that you want to know this stuff because you want to know who you're going to fund with your eyeballs.
I think it's an interesting counterpoint. I suppose what comes to mind for me is that the underlying reason that appeals to me and I think so many others is because it creates a bad guy out there and a good guy here. And you get to go, oh, I've never done that. You know what I mean? Like this couldn't happen to me because I never did that and I've never had that call. But I think if we go a little bit broader and we go, have you ever been really unkind to someone that you loved? You know what I mean? Have you ever like just been a total jerk? And have you ever done something that would make people, if they listened to 10 minutes of you, not want to support you if that was their experience of you? And they believed that that was representative. The answer for me is yes. You know, I've every time I play League of Legends,
poor Henry,
poor brother. Oh my gosh, if he ever records me screaming at him in League of Legends,
brother on brother violence,
brother
right
on brother. And you know, thank God that I know he would never. You know, I know that
that's what you think.
That's. But I think if everybody took that broader view of their life and like, I haven't done this particular thing, but have I ever been such a jerk, so unkind, so callous, mm-hmm. so whatever, that if somebody clipped that 15 minutes of me, that it would make people not want to associate with me? For me, the answer is yes, I have been that way. And I think the answer is yes for everybody else. And if you're out there, which I know sometimes happen when I say things like this, feeling superior to me because you go, not me, I think you're so wrong. Like I'm trying to set this up like if you, but yes, all of us are in this camp of having done that. So yeah, you know, I will try to avoid those sorts of things but I do understand what you're saying. You're like, hey, there's probably appropriate boycotts if you knew what was going on behind closed doors, even if it wasn't
just because you don't want to fund them.
Yeah.
You know, because your view is their source of power.
And sure.
You're going, I don't like when this person has power.
Yeah. Like R. Kelly or somebody, you know, say that he doesn't wind up going to jail and you're like, maybe I should stop listening to him, but I'm not going to know because.
Yeah. I think there's people, I think it's this is going to be so obvious, but it's a spectrum and it depends on the behavior. You know, I don't know this person's story, but there's certainly, like, it's bad to be illegally recorded. I 100%.
Well, I will say that the court of law for all of its, I mean, it is pretty brilliant. And it says, look, if you get evidence mm-hmm. and it's damning and it was gotten in the wrong way, we throw it out. Like that is how we do it, because the structure of how we go about learning things about the world is more important than any particular verdict.
Sure.
And so I think that there's wisdom to that. That like, you know what, maybe I will listen to I Believe I Can Fly and I'll be
But they also do. They also do wiretaps. They just might be smart enough to make sure they wiretap in public.
They get a federal warrant. No, there's. You can wiretap. You can do that, but a judge needs to say you have enough reason to do so.
Sure, I'm just saying it's not like you can't record someone who doesn't know they're being recorded.
I mean, with the Patriot Act, you could do anything you want. This is what Edward Snowden was trying to say: is that all of those protections are now gone, and they just are going to selectively point the finger. I think that's mostly what I'd had. What do you got?
It's a program we've already talked about on the podcast. It's Marketing Step by Step. It is going through this course was an inflection point for Charisma on Command. We immediately became 10 times better at business from going through this course. I learned more from this course than I did from going to Wharton Business School. Mm-hmm. It takes you from, I have no idea what to call my business. I have no idea what product I'm going to do. I want to be an entrepreneur, but I don't know how. All the way through to ideation, naming the product, marketing and promoting the product. It's literally, in my opinion, the best course for people who want to be entrepreneurs but don't know how to do it, or have started a business but it's not as successful as they'd like.
It is a starter. Like if you're at six plus, six maybe. If you're at seven figures, this isn't for you.
Yeah, if you make $2 million in revenue, it's not for you. If you make $200,000 in revenue or $20,000 in revenue, or you just want to be an entrepreneur, this is absolutely for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I genuinely think I would, even though our business is doing quite well, would still benefit us to go through it more regularly. But anyway, it's called Marketing Step by Step. I've gone through a lot of courses. I hunted this one down to try to affiliate for it because I think it's so good. And if you're interested, instead of getting it for $1,000, which is what it normally retails for, you can get it for $97, just because I happen to be friends with the CEO, by going to ebonpagantraining.com/charisma. And we will link to that at the bottom of the podcast as well. So I don't know what discount that is. It's a massive percent. But yeah, instead of being $1,000, it's $97. And Justin gets half of it.
Yeah.
So you're giving Eben $50 and Justin $50.
And I will say, you know, you'll see we don't do discounts on Charisma University. It is $600 if you want the whole course. You can get first impressions for cheaper. But if you want the whole course, it's $600. We're able to do this because you know the guy and they are like, okay, yeah, we'll do a discount for your guys. We'll make it really steep. I was like, fucking awesome.
Yeah, yeah. You know, all like, I had to do was send several texts and emails and beg them to let us have it. Yeah. So yeah, I thought $1,000 would be a lot for people who are starting to get into entrepreneurship and are in the early innings. So I asked if we could do a lower price. And he said, yeah, well, the lowest I've ever offered it for was $97. I said, great, can I have that? Mm-hmm. Can I have the lowest you've ever offered it for? So that's what we got. So evanpingentraining.com/charisma.
Link in the description.
Check out marketing step by step. And it's a great program.
Cool. Let's do it.
Yeah. And then the one thing I wanted to talk about, there's actually a couple things. It's been so long. Some of this is old news. I got like OnlyFans banning sexual explicit
news.
Content.
I knew you got news.
That's months ago. It's old hat. This is what happens when we take 2 weeks off. But there was one thing I saw. I saw a video on YouTube of Trump telling people to get the vaccine. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that?
Yes. And boom.
I thought it was fascinating. He says, I believe totally in your freedoms, and everyone applauds. And he goes, but I recommend taking the vaccine. I did it. It's good. Take the vaccine. He gets booed and immediately pivots to, hey, the vaccines work, but you've got your freedoms. You've got your freedoms. You have to maintain your freedoms. So he clearly understands that that is not a position he can ride if he's trying to run for president a second time. And was very, very quick, like wanted to throw it out there. Just because he's often split testing to see how it goes, but was quick to abandon that. And I thought it was interesting because everybody often talks about how Trumpers is what they call them will just eat anything that Trump throws their way, and that's a often line that you'll hear certain people say. So you know these Trumpers, if he says jump, they say how high. If he says jump off a cliff, they do it. And apparently that is not the case. You know, maybe this was at one point true, but either he tapped into his pre-existing thoughts or he created Frankenstein's monster he's lost control of. Mm-hmm. But he definitely cannot just say any position and get the people who obviously are his fans. They're showing up to his rallies
2 years before, 3 years before an election. Yeah.
And they'll boo him. He does not have the ability to just say whatever he wants and have the fans applaud and take it in as their own belief system. So
I tend to go with the former, which is that I think Trump did not dictate the agenda. I think he had to tap deeply into a deep strain of distrust of the establishment, a sense that Washington, D.C. was the swamp. I don't think he could have picked any issue and made it his wall. I think a distrust of immigrants was baked into a lot of that. And in coming in, he's been able to take a couple pet projects and be like, you know, this is one degree off of, you know, I've already said that I'm your guy. You don't have a strong opinion about, I don't know, X, Y, or Z, and I can move you there. But I do think that distrust of Bill Gates, things that CNN likes, it was deeply baked in. And if you try to put the Trumpiness against that, the Trumpiness will lose. And I don't think that that's a novel thing since he's lost the presidency. I think that he actually has had to move to them. And if you looked at his positions his whole life, I mean, the guy was a Democrat. Like he was a donor. He had to move. He had to
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Trump has probably paid for abortions.
and then
had to anoint Republican Supreme Court justices that were pro-life. I think this idea, I guess what I thought was interesting is the narrative was Trump has these
around his finger
in the palm of his hands and they'll believe anything he says. And it's actually looks like much more so that he figured out what they wanted to hear, said it as if it was his idea and convinced people that he had followers in the palm of his hands. Mm-hmm. But
and they like him a lot. And he, like I said, he could take a thing that's one degree different and move a ton of people towards it. Yeah. But if you go against that deeper pre-existing belief set, you know, if Trump came out and was like, I'm an atheist, good luck. You know what I mean? How's your Trumpiness going to play against religion?
Obviously, he doesn't even feel comfortable saying he's pro-choice or putting up a Supreme Court justice that's pro-choice.
Or holding a Bible. Yeah, and, you know, is that guy religious? Doesn't seem so. Doesn't seem like he takes it very sincerely. But, yeah, he can't. He has to move to them, I think, more than people realize. At least more than I've heard it repeated. So yeah, I totally agree with that.
So I just thought that was interesting. And then there's one more thing which I thought was fascinating, which I thought highlighted what we've talked about before, which is the importance of being philosophically sound by applying, okay, if I think this, what are the secondary effects of it? because I saw this viral Instagram post where this woman in Birmingham, Michigan was talking to the Board of Education about a mask mandate they had for schools. And she said, if God wanted us to cover our mouth and nose, he would have made us that way. She was wearing glasses at the time because God did not give her 20/20 vision.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just thought it was so interesting because people will sometimes comment, how do you guys come up with your arguments? You seem very like well thought in terms of your beliefs. The number one rule is, if I believe this, what else follows? Mm-hmm. So if I believe that I don't need to wear a mask because if God wanted me to cover my nose and throat, he would have done it organically, biologically, you cannot supplement your eye vision with glasses. The second that you do, you are philosophically inconsistent.
Unless there's some sort of special difference between your mouth and nose and your eyes that I am not perceiving,
yeah,
which would be interesting to hear her justify.
Yeah. So one, I thought it was hilarious, but two, I thought it really highlighted that idea, that philosophical tool of, if I do take this as true, what else would follow? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the quote unquote dumb arguments that you see from people that don't make sense, that you can tell come with a bias, it's because they just don't ask that question of, if this is true.
She's wearing clothes. She's out right.
If this is
true,
if this is true, what else would logically follow?
God would. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I thought it highlighted something that we've talked about before when people ask, you know, how do you, cause it's often, especially for you, you're so quick on your feet. You can hear an argument that you've never encountered before and find the hole in it right away. And a lot of podcast commenters have said that they find that impressive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's your go-to tool. That's your very first, when presented with an argument, you go, okay, yeah, let's say I take you at your word.
I say yes. And I don't fight.
Now what?
I don't fight. Yeah. I just go, okay, so now you're for this. Oh no, you're not. Oh, why not? And it's, I don't know. Maybe that is number one philosophical debate, whatever it is that I lean on heavily, is what else does this mean? It actually is more helpful than trying to figure out why something is wrong, because now the other person has to figure out why it's wrong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You just say, okay, like, take those glasses off, strip down. You know what I mean? God would have built buildings for us. Get out of here.
Yeah, yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, you shouldn't be inside here. You're supposed to be out in the rain, naked, like God made you. You shave your armpits? God wouldn't have given you armpit hair. You cut that hair? God would have had it himself. You know what I mean? You don't have to cut your eyebrows. You know?
Yeah.
They take care of themselves, but you seem to have a bob cut. What's going on here? No, it's goofy. There's a lot of that going around everywhere. Yeah.
So no, it's just a great tool. Highly recommend it. If you think something doesn't make sense, but you can't figure out why, one of the best reasons or best ways to figure out why is just go, well, what else would fall from this? Mm-hmm. And the last thing I wanted to say, because I just looked it up because someone on our team had asked me, was thanks to all of the listeners and viewers on YouTube and either buying Charisma University, which allows us to donate money, or donating themselves, we have lifetime raised $840,000 for Charity Water.
Wow.
So I just wanted to take a pause, and to anyone who's listening who has bought Charisma University or has donated themselves or even has just watched our YouTube videos and helped 1.01 cent.
Yeah.
You know, we couldn't donate without all of you guys. So either directly or indirectly, you've helped us get $840,000 to people who don't have access to clean water so that they can have wells dug. And that's life-changing for them. You know,
crazy.
It means instead of walking miles to get water, they have it in their village. It means that kids can go to school instead of having to do the labor to survive. And I don't know, it's awesome. When I looked at it, I was blown away. And so I just wanted to just pause and say thank you to everyone who has directly or indirectly made that possible. It's been life-changing to thousands and thousands of people.
Yeah. So. And I don't want to. And at some point it's selfish, but I actually think it's now approaching the point where it should be necessary as like due diligence. I want to get on a plane and go see one of these, you know, like I think it is the amount that we are encouraging and putting in ourselves. While I do have belief, you know, that skepticism in me runs deep. So it's like, all right, let's go touch this, see this. Then I get on an airplane. I find out the Earth is flat. Africa doesn't exist. So it's all just no.
And
there are no wells.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. If we got suckered, it's not like we started a crypto where the audience gets suckered and we don't, because we've definitely given our fair share to Charity Water.
Sure.
So we'll have hurt the most. But I do believe them when they say that they lead to clean water. Even though we will take a trip to Africa once COVID. You can't right now. Because they don't want you
to bring your COVID.
A lot of these villages are remote. That's why they don't have access to water.
COVID. Yeah.
And so they don't have COVID. And so the idea of flying out some Americans to check out what they've done and then putting these communities at risk is not something that they want to do. So, sure. But I've been in the works with them. We'll try to go. We'll try to videotape it, release it on the podcast channel or on Charisma on Command or something like that. So I'm in the talks with the organization about whenever it's safe to
do that,
to go. But yeah, cool. Basically just big thanks, huge thanks. So we can do YouTube questions now.
Cool. Yeah, and also just so some of you guys know, we did, you might have seen some of the clips with Crystal and Kyle because we had that, and then we had Alex. If you want to see that full podcast, it is fully on our Patreon. We were unable to post it on this because they asked to have exclusive, and then we said, okay, exclusive with the exception of our Patreon. So if you want to see the full conversation we had with them, become a patron. It helps the podcast, covers Justin, makes everybody here happy.
I didn't know it was going to be behind a paywall when we
neither
shot
did
it.
I. So neither did I.
I thought that you guys would all get to watch that conversation. That was my impression when we did it, but turns out they have a membership site.
Yeah.
And it's behind the paywall.
Free content.
Yeah. I think it's also released on audio by now on their whatever podcast.
Okay. Great.
Yeah. It was not my intention to shoot a podcast and have it behind a paywall. Wanted you guys to be able to see it.
All right, first one is, am I overthinking this as rude? I live with my brother, and often when I'm around the house in a completely neutral mood, he initiates a conversation, makes a quirky comment, and bursts into a high-pitched, loud laughter. Since I'm in a neutral mood, I at the
just
very
just imagine
most,
this. He just goes, bazoinks.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Since I'm in a neutral mood, I at the very most chuckle. Sometimes I don't say much at all. He then says another quirky thing and bursts into really loud, high-pitched laughter while I'm making a smoothie or something. I'm clearly not reciprocating the mood, and it feels like he's making fun of me. Is this too subtle to have a concrete conversation about?
I want a video of this.
Wow.
So badly.
What a description. I don't know. That's a different relationship that you have with your brother than I have with mine. Because while we wouldn't be, like, lovingly, caringly honest, I would tell him to STF you, you know, or maybe just take away the TF, you know, be quiet.
You and your brother definitely have a very sibling-like relationship. You guys are harsher to each other than to anyone else.
But also, it wouldn't occur to me to ask
if you can say
if
something
I can
to
say
him.
Something to him. So I'm gonna kind of sit this one out because I feel unequipped to understand that relationship.
Well, there's two things here. One wasn't a question, but it was this: my brother is saying things and laughing, and I feel like he's laughing at me. Which I'm confused by because it sounds like he's saying quirky things, but you didn't mention that he's saying mean things about you. So I would start there with the fact that you think it's at you or about you. I think oftentimes people will be in a public place and people around them are laughing and they worry, oh, are they laughing at me? Are they talking about me? And they're often not. They're almost always not. So it could have nothing to do with you. It could just be your brother's way of trying to entertain himself. So I would, I guess, without knowing more, I would question whether it's at you or about you at all. But that said, I think you're fine to talk to your roommate or your brother about anything you want. The way you approach the conversation is what makes it rude or not rude. But the topic of, hey,
what are you doing?
When you do that, yeah, like, hey, when you do that, what are you going for? Are you making fun of me or are you trying to include me? I am confused by your behavior. There's nothing inherently rude about that at all. So I think you're totally in the clear to have a conversation with him. I would approach it from a place of not making any assumptions about him, not trying to mind read his intent. So I wouldn't come at it aggressively, but just come at it with curiosity, genuinely trying to understand what's going on.
Yep. That sounds right to me. Yes, you should. You can bring it up, and you can probably bring it up in a way that is curious. As opposed to,
I would be curious.
Yeah, I am curious.
I'm very curious. Yeah, if I had a roommate who was just
making noises
to themselves and making weird noises, I would just be like, "Hey, man, what is that? What's going on there? But without thinking it's about you, without thinking that it's an attack.
Yeah,
maybe he likes the Joker.
Yeah, I'm the Joker, baby.
Yeah, who knows? Just,
the latest one.
Yeah.
There's a girl I work with that I'm very sexually attracted to. However, I'm quite confident I do not want to be in a relationship with her. Is it ethical and wise to pursue a physical relationship with her? The context is a corporate, albeit virtual, work setting in which I interact with her.
I'm laughing on camera. Ben is looking at me because this happened to me. All right, that's why I'm laughing on camera.
The setting is a corporate, albeit virtual, work setting in which I interact with her for work-related tasks consistently, yet relatively infrequently. I feel like she might want a relationship, but I'm not certain.
So ethical and wise are two totally different
decisions. Yeah.
So is it ethical when someone wants to have sex with you for you to have sex with them consensually, as long as you don't lie in order to get sex? Yes. Which is to say, don't say you want to be their boyfriend and then sleep with them and then not. But if you are upfront and you say, hey, it's a heads up, I think you're really cute, I'm not looking for anything like a relationship, but do you want to grab a drink sometime? Ethically fine. Mm-hmm. Is it wise to hook up with a coworker? So I guess it depends on your level of scarcity. I will say that simultaneously, a lot of relationships occur from work hookups. And so to poo-poo them all would be to cancel out a lot of long-term boyfriend, girlfriend, marriage type setups. For yourself, though, if it were me, I wouldn't, because I would just assume that a lot of relationships don't end well. And while it could end up working out fine, it's a high downside move for not that much upside. If you're not looking for a relationship, you could just go find a casual hookup elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So ethically, I think it's fine. It doesn't sound like you're the person's superior. It sounds like you just work in the same office. So yeah, as long as you just, I would lead regardless. I'd lead with, hey, I'm not looking for a relationship. I would only want something casual, but I do find you attractive. Would you want to grab a drink? But I wouldn't do that personally, because I would just try to go have a relationship with someone that I didn't work with, because most relationships don't work out, and I wouldn't want to have that in my workplace just for my own sake. So that's what I would do, but
yeah,
do you?
Yeah. I mean, I laughed, so I'll give my short experience.
Well, you got taken down.
Different. It was aggressive on her part. She very much like aggressively tried to made me come out, keep drinking. Like it was, you know,
yeah, she got you drunk and took
me,
you down.
Grabbed me, you know, it was very aggressive on her part. It didn't wind up being a bad thing. The moments of discomfort were somebody else in the office liked her, and that was a friend, and that became uncomfortable for a moment before, as that person learned and knew, and then I told that person what had happened. But yeah, it wasn't, that particular one wasn't bad. And quite frankly, here's the thing. It's like, I think this happens all the time.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, it happens all the time. Some of them become relationships, some of them don't. Some of them end with real discomfort. To Ben's point, if you can, which I believe most, you know, get on a dating app or go to a bar or go to a park or a coffee shop or a bookstore and start a conversation and get your dating needs met outside of that, highly recommended. Mm-hmm. Because it's a better way of doing things. The only exception for that would be if you do feel abundant and you genuinely like this person, you're like, this is someone I might want to date and I work with them, then it's worth considering, because that now you're trying to start a relationship with an individual. But if you're looking for replaceable, casual sex, then you should find it elsewhere, would be my recommendation.
For your own sake.
And theirs and everyone around you in the office.
But not because it would be whatever unethical workplace, to do it, just because it's might end up being something you regret.
Mm-hmm.
All right, last one is, are there unique qualities to Charisma University that are different from therapy? I'm in the middle of planning for therapy, and it got me wondering if therapy is in a way an upgraded form of CU.
They're not even...
They're very different.
They're totally different.
Entirely different. I would say therapy equips you to go through your past and better understand yourself and hopefully work through trauma. And I mean, maybe tangentially it'll help you with confidence or self-love, but it's very much an internal exploration of yourself and
your closest relationships, maybe. You know.
Yeah. And then CU is very much more a tactical exploration of how to improve your results when interacting with other people. And there is a confidence module, but I'd say CU is for, I want to make more friends. I want my friends to respect me more. I wish I were a better leader. I wish I had more dates. I want to figure out how to get my bosses to like me. It's very much about having results in the external world, especially with people who you might not know or don't know well. Mm-hmm. And so to me, therapy and Charisma University are quite different. And if anything, therapy maybe has more overlap with emotional mastery.
Yeah.
But I would say, yeah, Charisma University is for when you want to change how the world is reacting to you and what your results are in the world. And therapy is much more about your internal experience and if you have anger or sadness or something like that.
Totally different solutions to different problems. A good therapeutic outcome might look like less anger in your relationship with your significant other, a repaired relationship with a mother, a parent, father, or brother, sister, whatever. A deeper sense of quiet when you're alone and few less compulsive behaviors. Like CU is like Ben said, it's actually those peripheral relationships that you can expect to expand upon. So it's like more friends, meaning I didn't know this person, you know, dates. Yeah. I wasn't dating and now we are.
Yeah. Or maybe I was an acquaintance and they weren't attracted to me and now they find me attractive because I'm more charismatic and more confident.
Yeah. I wasn't close to my boss. Now I am.
Yeah.
And like, don't expect, well, it can happen. Like things that are more likely to come as a result of CU, though they're not directly like friends, dates, promotions, that sort of stuff. Things likely to come out of therapy. Improved close relationships, deeper self-knowledge. If it's good, a deeper sense of self-satisfaction, like just with life.
Yeah, and maybe like if you react with extreme sadness or extreme anger to things that other people react to in a lesser degree, therapy may help you to kind of
emotional mastery.
Unrepress that anger such that it's you're having more like quote unquote typical reactions to things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're completely different.
That's all for YouTube.
All right. On to Patreon.
Lots coming on Patreon. We hope you guys join. It definitely helps us keep this podcast going. It all goes to Justin. And it's tremendously helpful. So we hope that you come over to Patreon. You get to join the Discord. You get to see at least what's going to be now another hour, I think, of us doing questions. And it becomes a podcast in and of itself. So if you like this, check it out. I think it's $3 at the cheapest level. So $3 a month, by the way. Either way, love you guys. Appreciate you watching. We'll see you soon. Take care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.